You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grevet. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grevet. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. My guest today is Colin O'Neill from the Center for Food Safety. Colin is the Director of Government Affairs for the Center for Food Safety. He regularly meets with members of Congress and their staff on issues of concern to the food safety community, including regulation and oversight of genetically engineered crops and animals, food and farm policy, organic agriculture and climate change, as well as nanotechnology and synthetic biology. Colin acts as a spokesperson for a wide range of issues and actions for the center. Today, he will be speaking with us about genetically engineered salmon. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show. And before we get started talking about the genetically engineered salmon issue, can you let our listeners know a little bit more about what the Center for Food Safety does?
Sure. The Center for Food Safety is a nonprofit public advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. We have offices in San Francisco, California, and in Portland, Oregon. And we essentially advocate for sustainable alternatives to industrial agriculture. We work through various policy arenas on Capitol Hill here in D.C., as well as at the state level. We're also actively involved in grassroots outreach and in litigation, both against private companies and the federal government. We can get more information at centerforfoodsafety.org.
Okay, thank you very much. So let's get started talking about genetically engineered salmon. The FDA recently announced that they were in the process of approving the Aqua Advantage GE salmon, which would really be the first genetically engineered salmon intended for human consumption. Can you let our listeners know, first of all, how this salmon is made? And then we'll discuss the inherent risks of introducing this salmon into our food chain.
Sure. And Carol, as you know, this is a really important moment in history because this would be the first time that the federal government approves any genetically engineered animal for human consumption. Now, there are over 35 species of fish, including trout, catfish, and tilapia, that have been genetically engineered. This GE salmon, this GE fish, is the first that the FDA is considering publicly.
So wait a minute. So you're telling me that catfish and tilapia, they're already doing this with these other fish, and the public's not aware of that?
Well, yes. There are at least 35 species of fish that I mentioned and countless others that have been genetically engineered, either by scientists or private companies or just researchers around the world. And so we know of this through the scientific literature, but I mentioned that we know of, and we can get into this a little later, but due to the FDA's rather untransparent regulatory process, the public doesn't know what applications the USDA or the US FDA is considering until it decides to approve those products. So at this point, this would be the first genetically engineered fish to be approved for human consumption.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about the salmon itself. How are these companies doing this?
So the Aqua Advantage salmon is currently being considered for approval by the FDA. It was developed by Aqua Bounty Technologies. This is a company that is based in Massachusetts. And what they have done is engineer an Atlantic salmon with DNA from a growth hormone gene from an unrelated Pacific salmon, a Chinook salmon. And they've also spliced that DNA with DNA from the antifreeze genes of an Arctic eel pout. This is a fish that lives in the Arctic at deep waters. And so normally an Atlantic salmon's growth hormone stimulates growth production in the, you know, certain months of the year. And it will turn off that production or growth during other months of the year. essentially to survive. What this genetic modification has done is essentially keep the switch from being turned off. And this transgenic Atlantic salmon produces growth hormone all year round. And this essentially produces a fish that grows at what the company claims to be twice the normal rate of conventionally farmed Atlantic salmon.
So what do they feel the value in that is?
Well, what this essentially allows the company and would allow the aquaculture industry to do is mitigate the losses that they have when they crowd fish into really confined net pens. You can imagine any animal would experience reduction in growth if they're confined into smaller areas. They tend to be a little more sickly, they tend to develop disease, or they tend to just not grow to their normal potential. What this does is basically allow the fish producers, the fish farmers, to grow these salmon in the same type of confined settings, but still get the normal rate of production that they would get.
Okay. And how does this genetically engineered salmon threaten the wild population?
Well, you know, we know that escaped GE fish pose serious risks to wild populations of fish. Not only do we know that currently millions of farm salmon escape from net pens every year, and those escaped farm salmon compete with wild salmon for not only food but also mates. What you're introducing into this type of escapement scenario is not only would you have the risk of GE salmon escaping into the wild and competing with wild populations for food and mates, but also you can have the transgenic contamination of wild species. Now, we know here on the East Coast where I am that that Atlantic salmon in the wild are on the endangered species list. So essentially, any escape of a transgenic salmon that could grow faster and outcompete wild populations for not only food but mates could be the end of some of those endangered populations.
Wow. So essentially, we could just have all genetically engineered salmon.
That is a very real threat. And unfortunately, up until, you know, we've raised them in public comments before, but the FDA is really not assessing what happens if these GE fish escape. They're merely saying that we trust that the company's systems will not fail and that there will be no escape. And so we're really not looking at what happens if GE fish escape. And that's a real concern for us.
Right. And I know that in doing some research that Aqua Bounty says that it only produces sterile females. Mm-hmm. And there appears to be evidence that that's not true. Is that correct?
That's very correct. In fact, in the FDA's own briefing packet that it published in 2010, which published all of the data and materials that the company had provided, Aqua Bounty stated that they would produce only sterile female fish. However, FDA noted that because of the commercial facility and commercial production, that you can really only guarantee sterility up to 95%. So that says that 5% of these fish could be fertile and able to reproduce in the wild if they escape. Now, this is a company that would be producing millions of eggs a year. So 5% of any number of untold millions of eggs that they're producing could amount to a serious threat if those eggs or fish do escape. And now the other concern too is that the company has asserted that it will only produce females. However, you know, we know that not only does the company need fertile adults to produce eggs, but they will need both females and males at their facility in Prince Edward Island, Canada. So any escape because of natural disaster, floods or hurricanes or nor'easters could cause the escape of fertile adult fish who would be able to reproduce in the wild.
Yeah, and it seems like wouldn't they need to keep fertile fish to produce additional offspring?
They do indeed. And this is frankly something that we see as a major oversight, not only by the company but by the FDA, that they've failed to really adequately assess the impact of escaped fertile adult fish that are needed through the production process.
So it's not just our oceans, but there's also a threat to inland waters like our lakes. Isn't that true?
That's very true. And we know that here in the U.S., many of our inland waters, lakes, are already suffering from invasive species. Here in Washington, D.C., we have the snakehead, which infested our waters in the mid-2000s and now has really taken over. We know more inland that Asian carp have really grabbed a foothold in local ecosystems. So we know the dangers that invasive species can have. This fish, which is intended to grow twice as fast as conventional Atlantic salmon, could really flourish in some environments. And this is just one additional risk that our water and ecosystems will face.
Right. So besides the risks to the environment, and which is tragic enough, what about GE salmon? What kind of a risk do you think we have with human health?
Well, that's an excellent question. First, there are no long-term safety assessments, and there is no long-term data about the safety of consuming this genetically engineered salmon. As far as we know, in the information that's been provided to the public, no testing has ever been done to assess the full life cycle of this fish. So we don't know from beginning to end the full suite of food safety risks that it may pose. However, we do know that the data provided by the FDA to the public is, simply put, inadequate. For instance, tests about allergenicity, whether these fish could cause allergic reactions or be more allergic for some consumers or not, only involved 6 fish. My colleague refers to this as, you know, inadequate for a science fair project, let alone federal approval.
Yeah, correct. That is just unbelievable. 6 fish?
It's really astounding, actually. And this is the type of information that consumers would not be able to have, especially since FDA has said that up until now that they likely would not require the labeling of GE salmon. So not only would consumers be deprived rigorous health and safety data and upfront tests before this product is approved, but on the back end, they would be denied the transparency of at least knowing if when they're buying Atlantic salmon or any type of salmon in the supermarket, whether that salmon was genetically engineered or not.
And also, isn't it a concern about antibiotics? Because it's my understanding that in a lot of the farm raised, they have to use antibiotics to control disease.
That's true. The routine use of antibiotics to control disease in factory farm operations, and we refer to this as factory fish farming, because essentially when you're confining these fish into small environments, as I mentioned, they get sick and they're more susceptible to disease. That will increase the amount of antibiotics likely used, and residues of antibiotics on both salmon itself and exposure to certain classes of antibiotics, which can also cause allergic reactions in certain consumers, will really elevate the risks for consumers.
Yes, I recently did a show about imported seafood, and I was really surprised to learn that the FDA really only assesses 2% of the imported seafood that comes into this country. And that assessment sometimes is as simple as just looking or smelling the fish. Mm-hmm. And that they really only tested about 0.1% of the fish. And when some of the fish that they did test had these antibiotics in them, and some of the antibiotics were antibiotics that were outlawed in this country. Mm-hmm. So the antibiotics issue in and of itself is just a huge concern to me.
Yeah, it is really astounding. And this is information that people would be deprived. Certainly knowing that these fish, and I'll give you an example about a disease susceptibility, but knowing that these fish can be more sick than other farmed fish and likely would require more antibiotics is really important information to have as a consumer. Now, it's important to note that throughout this process, which the FDA began in 2010, there was an interesting piece of the story that the public was really deprived of, and maybe federal agencies were deprived of. But previously undisclosed documents surfaced during a Canadian investigation that revealed that the Aqua Bounty Prince Edward Island facility, this is up in Canada, was contaminated in 2009 with a new strain of infectious salmon anemia. Now, this is the deadly fish flu that has been devastating fish stocks around the world. This information was hidden from the public in 2010 and only surfaced after public outcry demanded it. And the FDA finally acknowledged this when they released their materials this past December. But this is just an example of how these fish may be more susceptible to disease and may, in fact, require more things like antibiotics.
Well, is it true that there are no federal laws governing the regulation of genetically engineered animals?
What we have here is essentially what we often call square peg, round hole regulation. If a transgenic animal or a GE animal, as we call it as well, is a round peg, the U.S. government is trying to shut. And what we have is that the existing new animal drug laws.
You know, I'm sorry, we lost our internet connection for a second. Can you just restate your sentence? Technology sometimes fails.
Oh, sure. So what we have here is that the FDA has never produced any binding laws or regulations governing the regulation of genetically engineered animals. Instead, in 2009, they published a industry guidance, which is a non-binding form of regulation, which in essence told the industry that it would regulate genetically engineered animals under its existing new animal drug rubric. They're essentially treating genetically engineered animals as drugs, and we know that this is a far cry from the real regulations needed to encompass the full suite of environmental and economic and food safety risks that GE animals may pose.
Well, what is the Center for Food Safety currently doing to stop the GE salmon? And, you know, you can tell us a little bit about that, and then we're going to talk about what people can do.
Sure. Well, to learn more about this issue, I'll say you can visit, we have a website devoted solely to the GE fish. It's www.ge-fish.org. And there you can learn about what the center has been doing since FDA first announced that it was beginning its approval process back in 2010. CFS has convened a large coalition of environmental, consumer, business, and fishing groups and companies who oppose the approval of GE fish. And have called for the labeling of GE fish if FDA does decide to move forward with its approval. We've filed numerous legal petitions and policy comments with the agency and are currently calling on FDA to essentially put the brakes on this approval process until and unless it conducts a full environmental impact statement, which is a more rigorous environmental assessment than it's currently doing, as well as fully consult with our federal wildlife agencies, the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service, about what the impacts of escaped GE salmon would be on our wild populations, like the Atlantic salmon, which is on the endangered species list.
Okay.
We've also been working with members of Congress who are very concerned about this GE fish. Certainly, I think most members in the Pacific Northwest have been leading the charge, but even members in the Northeast and across the states have really raised concerns with not only the FDA's approval and regulatory process, but what are going to be the impacts for consumers, and what precedent will this set for how FDA decides to approve and regulate genetically engineered animals moving forward.
Okay, and what can we the people do? One of the reasons we wanted to do this show is that the comment period to comment to the FDA has been extended, correct?
That's correct.
Until April 26th?
April 26th, you're correct.
Okay, so can you let our listeners know what they can do and how they can get involved?
Sure. Well, there are really three simple steps. First, I'd encourage everyone to visit our website, ge-fish.org, where you can sign an action alert or sign a form letter, which will be sent to the FDA, saying that you oppose the approval of GE Fish. You ask the FDA conduct a full EIS and conduct assessments on our with our federal wildlife agencies, and also that labeling is a must. The second point I'd say is call your member of Congress, call your senators, and express to them your opposition to FDA's approval of GE salmon and ask that they do something about it. Members of Congress are certainly eager to help on this issue because they know that consumers really want labeling. They want more information, not less. And they don't want approvals of things like this to unintentionally hurt consumers or the environment or the fishing industry. And the third thing I'd say is for those people listening that do eat fish, support local and regional fisheries. Support wild fisheries. I'll say that throughout this process, members of the Alaskan delegation in Congress have really been at the forefront of raising opposition to the salmon because they know the vital economic benefits of supporting wild fisheries. Alaska currently doesn't allow aquaculture because they've seen how escaped farm salmon and escaped other farmed fish can really devastate wild stocks in other states and in other countries. And so they made a point of, rather than investing in aquaculture, they invested in the sustainable management of their wild populations. What they've seen is, over the past decade, a resurgence in a number of their populations, and they're having near historic runs of salmon now. And this is really because they've supported sustainable management of wild stocks, and haven't resorted to these band-aid fixes like aquaculture and like the use of genetic engineering in aquaculture. So supporting small and local fisheries and supporting wild fisheries is really is something else that consumers can do.
That's wonderful. You know, I have a question about, I've seen a lot of online petitions to stop Frankenfish or GE salmon. How effective are these petitions? There's been all kinds of different ones out there.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that really indicates how fed up people are. They feel like either the FDA or, if you're talking about genetically engineered crops, the USDA or the White House in general is not listening. However, it really matters. The government is listening. And I think certainly this additional 60-day comment period is an indicator that public opposition to GE salmon, public demand for labeling is getting through and that message is being heard. So I'd certainly encourage your listeners to keep joining these petitions and keep getting the word out. I will say that, you know, some types of petitions are maybe more effective than others. Certainly by joining our petition on our website, those comments get sent directly to the FDA and they get read directly by the FDA. They have to respond legally to those comments that are sent to them during the public comment period. Other petitions are more voluntary and are more symbolic in nature. But certainly getting your public comment to the FDA during the next 60 days is vital.
One of the things that I hear quite often is there's not a whole lot of confidence in our FDA. Mm-hmm. So I think people can have a feeling of, you know, why bother, which, you know, we would never be an advocate of why bother scenario because we believe everybody's voice is important. But the FDA just doesn't seem to be doing a very good job.
Certainly. And it is easy to be disheartened by this. At the same time, these are the really tangible moments in history where change can happen. This is the point where so many people have called on the FDA to do the right thing that they're extending their comment period by 60 days. This is something that we don't see very often. Members of Congress are really concerned about not only this genetically engineered salmon application, but the precedent that it's going to be setting. So we have members of Congress calling for mandatory labeling. We have members of Congress wanting to prohibit the transportation and raising of GE salmon in U.S. waters. And we have a number of public advocacy groups that have really taken this issue on. I mentioned the coalition that we've been running. There are groups, not only at the national level, but at the state level that are trying to get their state governments involved in this. In 2010, we saw, letters from the New York State Assembly. There was a letter sent from the Alaska governor, and even city councils in Alaska sending their comments to the FDA, demanding that they not approve this GE fish. So, you know, I think it is easy to be disheartened. At the same time, this is the unique moment in history where consumers and the public, members of Congress, and the important stakeholders at the table can use this moment to say, all right, this isn't the right framework that we should be approving or assessing the risks of genetically engineered animals, but how should we? And I think that's the important thing to be asking, and why it's really valuable that you and your listeners are taking this issue on.
Right. And, you know, we're always advocates of people just using their personal power, and this is one way of doing it. And it's a very important issue that, you know, as many people as possible to, you know, join in and have their voice be heard. You know, never before in history has it been this important, I feel, as right now in the whole labeling issue certainly the genetically engineered salmon issue. So thank you for informing us about this, Colin. And can you give us that website one more time where people can go?
Sure thing. Yep, that website is www.ge-fish.org. There you'll see what members of Congress have been doing. You'll see what nonprofits and public advocacy groups have been doing. And you can also sign online petitions and sign up for our list so that you'll be kept informed as this issue moves forward.
Great. Well, Colin, in doing some research on you, I also found that you were a co-author of the book Nano Exposed, A Citizen's Guide to Nanotechnology. We've started to hear more about nanotechnology being used in our food, and this appears to be the next frontier in food science. For those who've never heard of this or don't even understand what nanotechnology and food have to do with each other, what could you tell them briefly about it?
Sure. Well, nanotechnology is a really interesting technological development. So simply put, nanotechnology is the science of the small. What engineers, scientists are doing is not only engineering materials, but they're engineering them at the nanoscale. So this is smaller than micro. And what they're doing is incorporating novel characteristics into consumer products. I'll give you an example. One company has produced a sock, and this is happening a lot in clothing, that uses nano silver. Silver is a natural antimicrobial, so it can be used to kind of kill odors and kill bacteria as well. What they're doing is basically producing very small amounts of silver, putting them into socks so your feet don't stink or you could wear these socks for a couple days. However, what we found is that after a couple washes, this silver washes right out of your socks. And it washes right into your public waterways. Because it's an antimicrobial, it is really dangerous for aquatic invertebrates. It's dangerous for beneficial bacteria, and can get into public waterways and essentially wreak havoc. This is an area that is really unregulated, and members of Congress, members of the scientific community, and some NGOs and public advocates have raised this issue. But so far, there are really few efforts that have been taken undertaken to assess the impacts of nanotechnology.
Well, it sounds like it could be the next labeling issue.
It certainly could be, and both in the U.S. and abroad, the use of nano titanium dioxide and nano zinc oxide, which are two compounds that are used in their bulk form in sunscreens. But they're being used in sunscreens now, and nano titanium dioxide, nano zinc oxide can get into your bloodstream when, if you have a cut or if you're, if there's any abrasions in your skin, including, and they can also be ingested. And the health impacts of consuming, nano ingredients, nano-sized ingredients, is still really up in the air. Although the data and the science that we do have gives, caution and would really, it could raise some alarms, and red flags. And this is once again an area that's really underregulated, in many senses unregulated, and something that consumers don't know about.
Wow. Well, I know that I've mentioned it to some people, and a lot of people don't have never even heard of it. So we're gonna really keep our eye on this issue and bring it more to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
So one more question I have for you is that today is a historic day. It's the case Bowman versus Monsanto. It's a seed patent case that's being heard by the Supreme Court. And I understand that the Center for Food Safety wrote a brief in support of Mr. Bowman. Do you have any comments mm-hmm. about this issue?
Yeah. So the Center for Food Safety has been very actively working on seed patents and issues that arise from seed patents for number of years. And you're right, we did submit an amicus brief in support of Mr. Bowman to the Supreme Court. We've seen in the past companies like Monsanto use seed patents and their proprietary ownership of seeds as really a gateway into really pressuring farmers. We've seen Monsanto and now a couple other companies using just very, very aggressive tactics to uphold their seed patents. Monsanto has taken hundreds of farmers to court, has made tens of millions of dollars as a result of settlements, and has really used aggressive pressure to enforce its patent rights. Yet all the while, there have been questions about the validity of patents. Can seeds be patented? Can DNA be patented? And can things that exist in nature be patented and upheld?
Well, we'll all be watching to see what happens with this case, and we'll keep everybody informed. And thank you once again, Colin, for being on our show and for giving us such great information. And that website, again, is gefish.org. Go there and please take action. This is a very important issue that affects all of us. And if you like what you hear on Food Integrity Now, please go to our website, foodintegritynow.org, and join us. We do shows every week. They come out on Wednesdays. Next week, we'll be talking with journalist and author Fred Kaufman. Fred is the author of a fascinating book that we feel is very important for our listeners to know about, and it's called Bet the Farm. So we look forward to doing that show and getting that information out to you. And if you're interested in advertising with us or donating to us, you can go to our website, foodintegritynow.org, and find out more information about that. And we appreciate you listening. And as always, stay active and stay informed.